Sergeant Pete, that's the least of our concerns, I suppose. We've got lots going on. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
All right. I'm doing okay. You know, just seeing the businesses boarded up downtown, we've noticed them here. Some of them have remained boarded up. Some of them are new. I was in the South Loop over the weekend, and I saw a few of them boarding up there, too. And, you know, you just see the interviews with the folks doing it. They just say it's a precaution. We don't know what to expect. I know the mayor and superintendent have come out to say that the city is prepared for anything that might result. And no matter which way the election goes, it's unclear how people will react.
Yeah, that's very true. I was just talking with somebody this morning, and you know, it's either going to be elation from the people that support Biden, or it's going to be, you know, what's the opposite of elation? Depression from the people that supported Biden. Mm-hmm. It can go either way. I just think that I think that they've got plans, and I think they practiced them the last few weeks, and I think they have the people set in what they're going to do. They've even got, I think they brought Steve Georges back to consult on how to do and handle these kinds of what they're expecting. They've got from 30 to 300 dump trucks. They're all loaded with gravel and everything to block off the streets. I understand they're going to open one bridge only, and that's the one by Trump Tower. But that's how the city's preparing. Now, the other side, if you read what has been put out, I mean, they're totally preparing also. They've got the ability to jam some police radios, which I think is a horrible situation.
Did you see that in the recent other protests, some of the other ones this summer? Did you see any of that kind of thing happen? Is this something?
Not really to the extent that they're putting out. I mean, they're literally putting out Facebook, YouTube, and places like that, the ways that they're going to try to disturb and disrupt the city. Mm-hmm. And they're going to be doing, having the police go one place, and then they're going to have people go the other place, and they're told to wear protective gear. They've got their so-called medics all set up. We saw with these kids that are spending 65 G or more to go to Northwestern. They've already demonstrated up in Evanston and broke windows. So,
yeah, you know, it's interesting.
I can see peaceful demonstrations. I can't see why you want to break some guy's windows.
Well, one of the things we've heard time and time again, whether it's Alderman Riley coming on to discuss what has happened in his ward, the downtown district, or whether it's Superintendent Brown or the mayor talking about it in news conferences, is that they're saying that there are peaceful protests. So there are people who are just out there exercising their rights to make their voices heard and to protest. And then embedded within these groups are the folks that have a little more backing behind them and are the ones that are pointing the lasers or throwing the bricks, throwing the fireworks, as you saw in Evanston this weekend. And those are the ones that make the police escalate the entire situation because of those people whose actions are by their very definition, raising the temperature in the protest area.
I don't think the police actually escalate. I think the people escalate.
That's what I was saying. When those fireworks are thrown, bricks are thrown from within the protest ranks, it doesn't matter if 99% of them are there to exercise their rights and doing the right thing and doing exactly as they should as an American citizen. If you've got other folks peppered in there who are acting in this way, police are going to respond.
Right, you're having people piggyback on, say, a legitimate protest or a legitimate demonstration, and you've got, with the umbrellas and the coats and the things like that, and who knows who's carrying guns and who won't have guns. It's just, it's a hectic time in this city with murders and shootings up 50% already in some of the neighborhoods.
Let's get to some of the numbers in a second, Sergeant Peep. I want to just mention here the mayor and the police superintendent were talking about how they are prepared for whatever should occur. Now, the mayor says that express yourself. We expect you to do that. Do it in a way that honors our traditions. This is what she said in a news conference. We don't have the right to take out our frustrations, our anger on someone else. And I didn't know what you said about there was only one bridge being raised, but I know some folks were upset that she didn't rule out this idea that one of the reactions or the responses the city might have would be to shut down the CTA again. I know some folks say that sort of restricts people who rely on that for transportation, but that may be a measure the city might just need to take.
Right, and you know, the concern's going to be, I've been going down to Northwestern Memorial Hospital pretty regularly lately for some certain things, and you see the police all over down there, but now you get to the point where if there's demonstrations, you know the election's not going to be final on Tuesday night, so you probably got Wednesday and Thursday where they're still going to be counting ballots or whatever. So those are going to be the times when people are going to say, oh, they're stealing the election, or they're not stealing the election, or they're not counting the ballots, or the ballots are crooked. And that's just going to feed into this, into these groups. And then the people that piggyback are going to say, well, let the police, the peaceful protesters go along their way. And then while the police are busy walking and guiding and protecting them, we can go and do what we want, because Jewelers Row, they're starting to board up down there. They're starting to board up places where you don't think they're going to board up.
Mm-hmm. Hey, I want to ask you about this, because they get fairly detailed in some of these news conferences. OEMC was talking about how they're activating their all operations, and they're going to be checking activity, monitoring social media activity, crowds. They're going to be, checking out all kinds of things happening in advance. Over the past few weeks, they've been holding sort of drills downtown. We've seen some of that. They're talking about any scenario that could occur. They want to be prepared for it. And it just wonders, does that sort of signal to the folks who aren't exactly who want to sow unrest that this is what's going to happen, that they're sort of telegraphing the plans?
Right. I mean, they're literally putting out there what they want to do and how they're going to do it and where they're going to do it. And, you know, you only have so many police, and you only have so many police that are available to handle these protesters in the business districts all over the city. And then you have your normal crime that the police have to respond to. So, you know, canceling days off has already been done. There was, in the last group of protests they had, there were policemen that worked 27, 28, 29 straight days, 12-hour days. And, God, you know, the money's great. It's, you know, it's overtime. It's time and a half. That's marvelous. But the point is, when is the point that the police officer physically, mentally is going to become exhausted?
Mm-hmm. Mentally and financially as well, I think, would be another issue, because I know the mayor has tried to cut down on overtime. There isn't an unlimited budget for sure. So it is something that they're taking a look at. Hey, Sergeant Pete, can you hang on just a second? I have to pause here, and I want to pick it up on the other side, because we got the new crime numbers, and then there's also this new program that's being tried right now to expand the police work to include mental health
right.
counselors with them. I want to ask you about those things. So stick around, Sergeant Pete Kokonis. We'll pick it up on the other side with him. 217, back with more in a moment. New crime stats are out for the city, and I'd like to say there's good news, but I mean, even though the headlines sometimes reads crime is falling, it also needs to include that the most violent crimes, like shootings and murders, are actually up quite a bit, huh, Sergeant Pete?
Yeah, shootings and murders are up over 50%, but burglaries are down, you know, a great number, because people are home and it's hard to break into homes. But you've got well over 650 people have been killed in the city, and over 9,000 guns have been recovered in the city. So people saying we want to defund the police and we want to restructure or redistribute the funds and everything, take into consideration that the Black Lives Matter movement is, you know, protesting what they feel are injustices, and in some cases are, but they're also not going after the neighborhoods where these children, I mean, you've had 47 children murdered this year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's unbelievable. You've had 67 policemen shot at and 10 of them hit. And you know, the point that you were going to make you're talking about whether they're going to put mental health workers are going to be assigned to police officers. But if you read what they're saying about how that's going to be done, what's going to happen is the police are still going to be the primary responders to those incidents, with the mental health workers being secondary. So the police are going to go there and find out if it's safe, find out if there's weapons involved, find out if there's any violence, because once there's a sign of violence, the Illinois state law says you have to make an arrest. If somebody slaps somebody or hits somebody or punches somebody, there has to be an arrest. So now the mental health worker, if she or he are needed, they will step up and try to defuse the situation. But they're sure not going to do it without the aid of the police officers.
Here's what the release says. A pilot program included in the proposed 2021 city budget would add a co-responder to some 911 calls when mental health is involved. Advocates of the model have said that could save lives, like that of a man named Walter Wallace in Philadelphia, a black man who had struggled with mental health issues and who was fatally shot by police. So they're trying it here when there's truly a mental health crisis. What happens now? What do police do when they show up at a situation like that?
Well, you know, when there's a mental health crisis, and over my 38 years, there were a lot of those, and you would try to de-escalate, that's the word they use, but you try to calm everybody down, you try to soothe the guy, you try to see, you know, what it is. Is he having a mental issue, or is he, you know, tweaking on crack or on Special K or whatever? And some of those people you just can't control. And when I don't care when a man has a gun or a knife or a bat or any kind of weapon and he keeps advancing, no matter what you say, he's not stopping. A taser is useless if a guy's wearing a coat. And for the most part, they aren't very effective. Realistically, tasers aren't that effective. So now the police officer is in a situation where, what do I do? Do I let this guy take the first hit at me, or try to stab me and then shoot him, or do I shoot him first? And we can all second guess these things, and we can all take a position on what they should have done. But that poor policeman's got to make that decision in sometimes less than a second, because you can't let that guy get that first shot off.
This is what they're saying. The commander who heads this crisis intervention unit for the department, there's a three-pronged approach. I want to see what you think about this. The first is embedding a mental health professional into the 911 call center so that that person would have contact over the phone at first, maybe try to de-escalate from there. If it requires a response, an officer would be dispatched along with the person who is the mental health professional. And I guess the officers are going to get additional intervention training. I know you get it in the academy, but this would be additional. Lastly, the program would connect an individual who requires hospitalization to resources when they are discharged, so mental health sort of resources. I mean, it seems like the kind of program that everyone can agree with, at least in principle. When you hear the superintendent speak, he says that police officers are not mental health professionals. We get some training, but we are not the ones who should be responding to all of these calls.
We can't answer the questions for social issues. We can't answer the questions for mental problems. The idea of having somebody there at the OEMC to maybe try to talk to these people and get them to crisis hotlines or getting them to, you know, an ambulance. But by the same token, if they get an ambulance call, they dispatch a police car with it anyway. So the police are going to be there with the ambulance people, and there are a lot of times they're dispatched with fire trucks. So the firemen and the ambulance people, the medical workers, the mental health workers, the social workers, the people trying to get homeless people into housing, they all need backup, and they all need the support of the police. But unfortunately, the police aren't getting the support from the people that need them the most.
Those calls and people sort of participating, and we've talked about that a lot, that sort of seems as if that's building trust over time, and that's necessary, and that is one of the priorities of this department. It's just not something that I think you snap your fingers and it happens overnight.
Of course not. These young kids that are in the academy now, they're getting all sorts of training in de-escalation and being able to talk. You know, the old-time coppers, the guys that were veterans, the guys that were on the streets and stuff like that, they had a basic knowledge of how to interact and how to talk with people. We were out of cars. We were walking on walk-and-talk programs. We were communicating. When I worked in the projects, we did everything within the projects that we could, working with the people, the families, the kids, trying to make it safe for them. But now there's such an abundance of calls for service to the police, and the police are allocated to different positions within the city, that some districts are short of police officers. So where does the priority come? Obviously, a murder or rape would be that your top priorities. But then a domestic violence call or a domestic, my husband's, you know, drunk and he's hurting me, or my wife's drunk and she's hurting me, that's going to come after a murder and a rape. And if you're on a murder, you're tied up for a couple hours.
Yeah, I mean, this is the reality of the whole thing. And I know that everyone's looking at sort of police resources and the big budget that it is and what should be done. But that is the stark reality in a time when we have these kinds of crime numbers. Sergeant Pete, thank you. Thanks for calling in today.
Okay, thank you.